Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Thanks again for your support during WYPR's Pledge Drive. Your pledge will go a long way, no matter how much you contribute. A few months ago, we brought you a story about artists who face challenges, whether physical, developmental, or emotional, and the welcoming space they find at Make Studio. Make Studio is a nonprofit in Hamden that provides access to materials and studio space while fostering an inclusive community. Today, we listen back to a conversation we had in February with the art therapist Kathy Goucher, who co-founded Make Studio, and artist Erica Clark. I asked Kathy why she felt it was important to create a professional art space for adults with disabilities.
I'm an art therapist, and so I have a very strong belief in the power of art to be transformative in lives. And my partners, Jill and Stefan, worked with Art Enables in D.C., but there was no similar space here in Baltimore to do this work. Additionally, as an art therapist, I was seeing many of my artists going out into the world from St. Elizabeth School, namely, and other locations, going out into the world and still doing the wonderful art that I knew them to do, but not having that space to show their work, to come together with other artists, and to really express their own artist identity.
Erica, how did you learn about Make Studio?
Well, Make Studio, sometimes they get new spots for our local news flavor segments, and my mom ended up coming across one of these one day, and she taped it, and she got me to watch it. So from then, we looked up Make Studio, we learned more about it, and incoming artists to Make Studio, people who are interested in being prospective artists, they often come in and talk with Kathy or Stefan or Jill or any other staff member that may be present during that day. And they come in for a tour on the studio day and come in on a basis so that we can see the artists at work during that day and get a feel for what a studio day might be like.
Why did it seem appealing to you?
Well, I was getting into art at the time. I was at a perfect age for getting into new programs because I was at a transitioning age from high school to college age, and that's often an important time period for those with disabilities or under the spectrum.
But I'm still trying to understand why it appealed to you.
Well, I had started to get more into art, and we figured that getting into Make would be a good idea for me socially, to get my work out there, to improve my skill, and have a place for me to spend much of my day as well.
So, Erica, you're on the autism spectrum. How has Make Studio supported you as an artist?
We have multiple artists per day that come in. Some days are full, some aren't. So one of the primary ways that Make assists us is through social interaction with other artists. Make also helps us sell our artwork through exhibitions, through getting work into other galleries or programs. Make allows us to learn about a variety of materials, you get new practice with materials, and quite often workshops are held to learn about new skills as well.
Workshops where other artists come and share their approaches?
Right. Though sometimes Make also holds workshops for the general public as well.
And you've been an artist at Make for how long?
For about 5 years.
About 5 years. Kathy, tell me about the other artists.
We have a total of 30 artists who we support. Our artists work in a variety of different materials and methods. Some work in a three-dimensional fashion with papier-mâché and found materials, and one of our first artists is renowned for that in the area, Party Man. We have other artists who transform things into new works of art. And again, all of our artists have some kind of disability identified, but really the emphasis is on their artistry and supporting use of range of materials and doing what they do best.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with visual artist Erica Clark about Make Studio, which is celebrating its 8th anniversary tomorrow, Saturday, from 1 to 4 p.m. Also with us is co-founder Kathy Goucher. Kathy, what does Make Studio provide for artists? Erica told us some of it.
We do provide a professional studio space, a gallery space, materials, professional grade materials for artists. We also provide social supports and vocational supports as needed to artists. So if there's a new material they want to try, if there's a challenge that they're having with a piece and they want to talk it through and get critique, if they're having issue with the actual physicality of the space or navigating the social situations that might arise in the studio, shared studio space, we provide all of that, as well as we provide access to sales and exhibition opportunities in the community.
So tell me more about that business aspect.
Absolutely. We're always looking for opportunities to partner with fellow local artists and gallery spaces to host and co-host shows. We do host shows in our own gallery space, but we do look for opportunities to do so out in the community at other galleries, because all of our artists are making 70% of each sale of their work.
Explain that. What if an artist sells a work?
If an artist sells a work, they're receiving 70% of the proceeds. 30% are rolling back into some costs up front to defray some of the costs of framing, providing the materials, and such.
Erica, how would you describe the Make Studio community? What do you get from the community?
The Make Studio community is always a very friendly community. Artists tend to be pretty tight-knit, and we help each other throughout the day.
Do your contacts with other artists affect how you approach your art?
Well, even by just osmosis, they can affect how your art comes across sometimes. In terms of perhaps your color, perhaps in terms of your textures, how your line work may come, maybe some subject matter, and a lot of potential ways to get inspired by your fellow artists.
Erica, tell us about your artwork. What medium do you use?
I'd say that my primary mediums are color pencil and acrylic paint and watercolor paint.
And the subject matter?
Subject matter tends to vary, but tends to be on a more fantastic angle. Often kind of relating to mysticism, gods, fates. Occasionally, though, I do engage in still lives or just more common imagery.
That was artist Erica Clark, an art therapist and co-founder of Make Studio, Kathy Goucher. We spoke in February. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, you can hear the full interview. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Blue and white panels of woven damask fabric, cream-colored sculptures formed with pleats and honeycomb patterns. We met artist and MICA professor Annette Kauenberg more than a year ago when she was about to open an exhibit at the Baltimore Museum of Art titled From Digital to Damask. The exhibit features pieces inspired by nature and her native Netherlands, particularly the starched collars of the 16th and 17th centuries, and a painting of the era, Portrait of a Young Girl, by Frans Hals. I asked Annette Kauenberg to tell us about her recent Smithsonian Artist Research Fellowship, which she spent studying under a curator at the Division of Fishes at the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History.
She really gave me an idea of how science works in the sense of the methodology. So I looked at the interdependence of the skeleton and the skin, specifically in the fish. One of the things she would repeat to me, which was quite wonderful, I would say, oh, I believe I see this. And then she would turn to me and said, but do you have evidence for that? So the idea of that you need to look very carefully and observe and translate and then compare, for me, was really, really an important part of understanding the way of looking at something.
So tell me, if we're on the radio, obviously people don't have the visuals of your exhibition. How does that scientific experience affect the exhibit at the BMA right now?
At this point in my career, I'm really at the intersection of traditional craft and digital craft. And I think that that's really important. So how can we look at craft in the sense of weaving? To give an example of one of the four pieces that are in there, there are four woven, jacquard woven, inspired by Frans Hals's portrait of a young woman.
Frans Hals was painting in the 17th century?
17th century. I'm very influenced by him as a Dutch girl going to the museum. And when I look at that, I see that there is a system of communication in a sense, or a system of coding or data, what Jacquard does.
It's a kind of mechanized weaving, correct?
It's a mechanized weaving, what we see as the first computer. The use of punch cards is the data of the weaving, and it was invented in 1805. So it really stores data, and that's how I translated a lot of the imagery into the weavings.
So that's science. Those panels of complex designs, that's science.
There's engineering, of course, observing and translating and using technology. Plus, in the imagery, you will recognize that there are a lot of fish imagery that I studied at the Smithsonian, and they are translated into the weaving.
Portrait of a young woman. Describe that to us.
The Frans Hals portrait of a young woman is a very intriguing one for me, a very good example of the time period, but Frans Hals has a tendency to give the women a little bit more of personality, what didn't always happen. She has a little tiny smile on her face, what invites you in, what I really enjoy. And the other thing is she has a beautiful, besides a beautiful Dutch collar, she has a beautiful damask cloth dress on. That is what I did a lot of research on, what is partly coming from European weaving centers, but partly from China. So I really wanted to look at what the imagery said. There is a beautiful griffin in it on the front of her dress. And I took that as my lead into the fish so that I could use the fish in my damask.
She's very constrained. There's this enormous collar and also lace that looks very rigid around her head. And the bodice and waist of this dress is very cinched in.
Yeah, I've always been interested in clothing as a means of understanding the world. Here you see that there is the elegance of the lace and the elegance of the cloth itself. But on the other hand, there is the constraint of the society. That's how I grew up. I recognize it immediately in her portrait.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with fiber artist Annette Kauenberg. Some of the pieces of your exhibit, very sculptural, featuring folds like an accordion or a flat honeycomb pattern. How did the digital part of digital to damask come into play in creating those works?
I am a professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and I feel that I need to stay up with my profession. And I'm extremely interested in preserving tradition, but then on the other hand, I'm very interested in innovation. So I have tried to look again through the lens of textiles, and I see that the digital is really, you know, in the sense of the 3D printing, in the sense of CNC routing with a computer-generated machine, laser cutting, all is now the way of, it's another tool. So I'm really interested in thinking about how the tradition moves from one source to the next.
I'm fascinated by the tradition part. Working with textiles seems to be one way that you've stayed close to the cultural traditions of the Netherlands. Did you grow up sewing?
Well, I'm very influenced by the weekly sewing sessions of my mother, my grandmother, and my aunts. And as a little girl, I would sit in the corner and listen to them, to the women who were my role models, and realizing later that those images of beautiful threads and pins and constructing, deconstructing, mending were really an influence on my way of thinking. Not only that, but the women were really talking a lot. When you sit around, if it's quilting or if it's sewing, you talk of who you are, what your life is about, and how you resolve problems or how you think about life. But not only that, but I found later that I recognized that I saw aspects of them in the way they made clothing. So my grandmother always had pins in her mouth, because if you don't talk about it, it's not there, right? My aunt, who was really social, wanted to have that hot apple pie on the table and didn't care if there were pins or safety pins in her dresses. And she's 97 right now, and she still has those. It's not important to her. But I had an aunt who was very haute couture oriented, and was really very straightforward in life and wanted her kids to be straightforward. So I really started to understand that clothing had another meaning, that the meaning shifted from the moment that you're being in touch with it when you make, and that you, your personality comes through in it. So I wasn't even that interested in their clothing itself. I was more interested in seeing them, how they would translate their personality in their making.
These new digitally woven jacquard panels in your exhibit, mm-hmm. what do they tell us compared to what would have been woven 400 years ago?
By using my sculptures that were based on Dutch colors, I have used those images to translate into who are three-dimensional, into 2D patterns. And the digital component will make its design the way it wants to. And then you have to start manipulating in a sense of a pixel to a thread. How does the pixel translate into a thread? You know, what was a three-dimensional sculpture first, but then becomes flat. How does that translate? And that, for me, is that shifting of meaning again. It's the same way that I see what my teacher would say in grad school. When a sweater is worn on the body, it's different than it's folded in the closet. The meaning is totally different. And that's what I'm looking at. It's like, so what is the difference between the 2D and the 3D? What is the difference when it becomes material, when it translates into that?
That was artist and MICA professor Annette Kauenberg. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have links to photos of her work, our full interview from last August, and information about the upcoming exhibit Form.Print, which will open at the end of January at Towson University. The exhibit centers on 3D digital fabrication and the collaboration among artist, machine, and operator.